Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey, the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Welcome to Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer. Joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everyone.
And so glad Reverend Mark can be here with us tonight and to talk about this absolutely interesting topic of nothingness. So for the next 45 minutes, we're going to have dead air.
Dead air. That's right.
To demonstrate nothingness. That would be funny and hilarious, but probably not good for our listenership.
Calls more questions than it answers
sometimes. Right, right. So the idea of nothingness comes from a quote from Thomas Merton. And for those that don't know Merton, I'll give a little bit of an explanation. Thomas Merton was a Franciscan, a Trappist, actually. Which is
not a Trappist,
a Trappist.
There is a difference.
There is a difference. Yes, no nets and everything in this one. So he's a Trappist who lived at Gethsemane, Kentucky, at the friary there, and he wrote extensively back in the 50s and 60s, and early 70s. He died in the late 70s. Under mysterious circumstances, while attending the World Interfaith Conference in Bangkok. And he had just spoken out greatly against the communist regime and mysteriously died. So, a lot of questions that surround his death, but and so he wrote about Lent, one of his entries in one of his books about Lent. It says, "It is not enough to turn away in disgust from my illusions and faults and mistakes, to separate myself from them as if they were not, and as if I were someone other than myself. This kind of self-annihilation is only a worse illusion. It is a pretend humility, which by saying I am nothing, I mean in effect, I wish I were not what I am. To love our nothingness, we must repudiate nothing that is our own, nothing that we have, nothing that we are. We must see and admit that it is all ours. To love our nothingness, we must love everything in us that the proud man loves, when he loves himself, but we must love it for exactly the opposite reason. Proud man loves himself because he thinks he is worthy of love and respect and veneration for his own sake, because he thinks he is more worthy to be honored and loved and revered than all other men. The humble man also loves himself and seeks to be loved and honored, not because love and honor are due him, but because they are not due him. He seeks to be loved by the mercy of God. He begs to be loved and helped by the liberality of his fellow man. Knowing that he has nothing, he also knows that he needs everything. The proud man loves his own illusion and self-sufficiency. The spiritual man loves his very self-insufficiency. He desires to be filled to overflowing with the kindness and mercy of God." That's from Thoughts in Solitude, 1956. Your thoughts.
Sorry about that.
Right.
We have precarious connections here, so I wanted to make sure I didn't mess anything up there. Oh man, words that really fly in the face of modern mindsets of some deep stuff. Nothingness, or as some of the scriptures say, poured out before God. It's a lot of challenge. I think we often look at life as having to be filled and full of this, that, and the other. You know, we need to some people have to fill the space with sounds, or fill the time with things that you do, or as you're relaxing, you got to have something in front of you that's playing, whether it be television or computer. The fact that at times we should be poured out in a spiritual sense, and then at times that we should focus on just nothing, exact, you know, breathing, existing in a few moments. And I think we can unpack some of this as we're talking, but it is an opportunity for the Spirit of the divine and our spirits to reset and come back to balance, come back to center. And I think it's opportunities for us to look at things in life that truly do matter without distractions. I think when you're poured out, when you're focusing on the nothingness, you're pulling away distractions in life. And God, the amount of distractions that we're faced with, keeping us from our fulfilling our purpose and our callings and all the things that we think matters, it becomes endless. So I think the topic is relevant, for where we are, particularly now. Because there's a lot of things vying for attention right now. A lot of things wanting to be in our life.
Absolutely. I like the Buddhist philosophy of meditation. The goal is to kind of get to a point where your thoughts are under control and where you can sit in nothingness, as it were. And their philosophy is not that you have to fight those things and push them out, but rather acknowledge them and let them go. You know, acknowledge the thought and then let it go. And I think that we far too often today don't have that concept in our lives, because we constantly are putting, you know, we have thoughts that come to our mind and then we're like, oh, I'll deal with that in a minute, and then another thought, and I'll deal with that in a minute, and we allow those thoughts to pile up in our mind versus letting go of them. You know, it's much harder to let go. It is just pile up. And eventually we end up so distracted that we have absolutely no concept and ability to get back to a center, back to a place of center. We're so overwhelmed by everything. And, you know, the world makes that easy for us with 24-hour news cycle, and every time you turn around, a new television show, and the news about politics, and wars, and then that's before you even step out your front door. And then you drive down the road and you have every distraction of every billboard, because it's not enough to have just ads on television and radio. You got to have it on signs on the side of the road too.
Yep.
And then you're driving down the road and you have all this distraction with the radio, what's going on there, distraction of people talking in your car, and you know, it never ends.
Yep.
And then the phone rings
or something buzzes,
or yeah,
an alert pops up on some device,
right? You have an Amber Alert, suddenly you're looking for a car that's 1,500 miles away, right, as you drive down the road, you know. And so it's difficult in our daily lives to take time to just sit and be present, just to exist. And yet it would do us not only physically a tremendous amount of good, but spiritually too a tremendous amount of good to just sit there and be present. You know, not to think about anything in particular, just be there.
Yep.
And nothingness too also means embracing that we are, you know. We are who we are. Nothing more, nothing less. And in order to fully understand and fully grasp this concept of nothingness, we also have to be willing to make peace with ourselves and be ourselves.
Right.
Because one of the greatest distractions in the world is trying to be something else, something that people want us to be, something that isn't our authentic self.
Yeah. Yeah, and the difficulty sometimes is, the flip side of that is knowing that you're supposed to be, or you're supposed to be X, you're supposed to be Y, you're supposed to be Z, you know. And you see that in your heart, in your spirit, you feel it. But either for whatever reason, something in life has either been deducted from you or pulled away from you, or you haven't accomplished, you just haven't reached that level to where you're living into it. And the frustrating part is to trust process and to trust the road to get there. I talk about our purposes, our calling, and our assignments in life. You know, the purpose is the reason God places us here, and that is to be among creation, among humanity, representing God's grace, love, and mercy in the world. Your calling is that specific thing in your life that helps you to be a part in doing that in a specific manner.
Right.
But the assignments in our life lead us to fulfilling those things and adding to those things. Sometimes you have a season, and assignments are seasonal. And so your assignments sometimes will be, you know, maybe going to school or college or working out or studying a particular thing, serving others in a capacity. And those last for a season, but they add to, you know, you getting to where you're supposed to be. So a lot of times, when we're in the assignment portion and we haven't stepped into fulfilling calling or purpose, we feel like we're struggling, we're, you know, spinning wheels and stuff of that nature, and, you know, something's missing. It's important to stop in those moments and, like you said, just be, exist.
Right.
Allow your mind to slow down, because sometimes our thoughts are running past what we need to be dwelling on. Be present and say, what is it I'm supposed to be doing again? Reminding yourself. Sometimes it's important, even though I'm a minister, I know I'm a worker, I know that I'm a part of whatever my life is, 1, 2, 3, 4. Sometimes you have to pause, empty yourself, and let God pour in that fresh renewal sense of self, a renewed sense of purpose, of calling, of assignment. Many a times, particularly when I was a teenager, many a times I'd remind myself of my assignments were to serve, my assignments were to give, my time and energies towards other ministries or other organizations, other jobs so that I could learn down the road. And I compared myself to a lot of ministers that I looked up to. You know, some of my minister people that I felt were mentoring me from distances, they didn't really know me, were people that started in ministry at 15, 16, 17, 18 right. years old. So I started comparing myself, as most people do, to that path. Oh, I need right. to be doing that. I'm not really following God if I'm not doing that. I'm not really honoring what I'm supposed to do in life if I'm not doing that. We just start looking at everybody else, saying, how is their world compared to mine, and I need to live into theirs. And we get so caught up in what everybody else does, and we don't empty ourselves in moments to say, is that what I'm supposed to do? Is right. that where I'm supposed to be at? Where am I in this moment?
And that's a good point. Someone was mentioning in the chat feeling like they're spinning the rest of their life. That's part of where that feeling of spinning comes from, yeah. is when you start comparing yourself to others around you. When you start looking at so-and-so and you go, oh, they've got their life all together and figured out, you know, doing their job, doing their family, doing, you know, all the stuff they're doing, they've got it all figured out. And then we compare it to ourselves, and it looks like we're just spinning our wheels. Like we're not really, we don't really have it all together.
Oh, yeah.
But in the reality, we do have it all together. We're doing what we're called to do in that moment. It's just not what they're called to do. Yeah. They're called to do something different. And while they look like they have their ducks in a row, they may be looking at you going, man, my life's spinning around. Look at them. They got their life all figured out.
The fingerprint.
Right.
All of us have them. Some of them, some may look similar, but they're all different. Everybody's different. And the hardest thing for us to do is to stop that comparison of, well, I need to be exactly like Bishop, or I need to be exactly like a Pastor Mark, or I need to be exactly like, fill in the blank. And sometimes people, and I love finding interesting stories of people that have unorthodox ways of becoming, you know, a president of a college or president of the United States or senator or so on and so forth. You know, you look at somebody like President Truman. President Truman was just I could be completely wrong on this one, but he was in business just years before he actually became a senator for his state. He was just in business, like, I don't know, shoemaker, hat maker, stuff
right,
like that.
Right,
it was just a very modest business and stuff like that. And so, you know, by the time he became vice president of the United States under President Roosevelt, he'd only been a senator just a short period of time in comparison to other people, like a couple of terms or whatever.
Right.
Few terms. I know I'm being a little general because I don't know all my specifics.
Right.
But by the time he had assumed the presidency on the death of President Roosevelt, he'd only been with President Roosevelt a very few times, a handful of times. But then you look at his predecessor and the people, those that followed him, their paths to that exact same position were completely different.
Right.
President Truman, whether you agree with policies or not, in World War II, helped decisively end World War II for us with, you know, horrific outcome. You look at things like that, the path to those, to him versus other people was unprecedented.
Right.
And so, I mean, we've had people that have only been in political offices for short periods of time, and they assume the presidency, and then people that have spent their whole life in politics never assume and reach the presidency. So you look at stuff like that and you go, they all had the same amount of power, they all achieved the same office, but the path was so vastly different for so many of them. And I know that's kind of a generic example. It's the same thing in life, you know, how we get to certain positions, maybe unorthodox, right. You know, how I moved into the positions of leadership that I've had, and whether it be pastorate or praise and worship leader or position in my day job that I do, they've all been different, unprecedented from what other people do.
Right.
And there are times that I was like, oh, I wish I was more like them. But I have to be content in where I'm at now because it was a path that I was supposed to walk.
Right.
I didn't make all the right decisions, but I also didn't make all the wrong ones.
And Bishop Ben has joined us. Welcome aboard, Bishop Ben.
Welcome, Bishop.
Thank you. I'm sorry for being late. Please forgive me.
You're good. You're good. I have to say, because it's so rare that I get to use this word on a podcast, so I have to say this. President Truman, before he became a judge and then a senator, opened a haberdashery.
Yeah, thank you.
Kansas City, Missouri.
I knew it was such a weird thing that he had done. So
I have to mention it because it's the only time I'll probably ever say the word haberdashery.
What was it?
In a podcast, haberdashery.
There you go.
In a podcast. So
at least we got to say it a few times.
I have to say. But you're right. You know, far too often we compare our path to other paths. And that's their path. Their path to success in whatever they're doing. And so when we feel like we're spinning, sometimes that's all it really is that we're comparing ourselves to other people and to their path. And that's not our path. You know, our path lies in a complete different area. And when we start to embrace who we are and what we're doing, what we're called to do, we begin to really have that feeling that things are much more where they should be. Things are going the way they should be. And so it behooves us, as part of this whole journey into nothingness, to accept who we are, to accept the gifts that we have, to accept the fact that this is our path. And we're walking that path as best we can with the tools that we have, doing the best that we can. And that's all that's expected of us. That's all that's really expected of us, is do the best we can. And so, at the end of all of it, you know, hopefully we will come out, you know, successful and victorious at the end. But I mean, the reality is that you do the best you can in this moment to walk the path that you need to walk, and the rest will just fall in place.
Yeah,
it really will.
Sometimes we have to empty ourselves out of what I think my future's supposed to be. Sometimes we have to let go of the futures of the stuff that we think. You know, I shared this last Sunday or a couple of Sundays ago where I talked about what I thought. You know, I knew I was supposed to be a minister. I knew I was supposed to pastor. Of course, I did not want to pastor ever until about 5 or 6 months before I took on my first pastorate. I was like, you know, there was a saying among some of my peers at the time was, live long, don't pastor.
Right.
And so, or I'll pastor a church as long as there's no people in it, type of a mindset. And then when God began to change my heart and things shifted, and then I started pastoring, I couldn't think of anything else that I wanted to do ministry-wise. I couldn't think of anything else that I would want to do but be among the sheep, being among the people, and, you know, pointing them to the knowledge of the love of God, which is That's the primary focus of my ministry. I know it sounds super generic for some folks, but it absolutely is not. For people to latch onto the concept that God truly loves them, no matter who, what, where they are, what they look like, the skin color, orientation, you name it.
Right.
The, you know, their mental challenges, their physical challenges. God loves every one of us. Right. Locking people into that. And so, but my path in ministry, you know, was so altered in how I got to the things that I was doing, was so shifted and so changed and so adjusted or so different that I look back at it now and I'm going, man, I was one, stupid, naive, and thinking, that's the only path that there was. And then, of course, down the road, my heart was beating for the LGBTQIA community. Of course, I didn't know that was that's what it was going to entail at the time. But I knew that I'd have a ministry there, but I had no idea how to get from where I was to that point, because I was still pastoring, you know, a nominal church or what we would consider mainline type of a church. And I was going, how in the world do I get there? You know, I had fully resolved in myself that I was a gay man and knew people wouldn't accept me for who I was. But, you know, it was like, I'll deal with that at some point. And so the path that has led me to here is often that I reflect on, I'm like, man, it's crazy how God can orchestrate things. So it's like stepping back and everybody should go to college,
right,
or everybody should do XYZ in order to be successful in life. Some people can't handle college and they go to trade school, and that is their niche.
That's right.
You know, some of the most famous wealthy individuals in our society never went to college or never completed. And I'm not saying don't go to college. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying be open to the possibility that your path may be different. Your path may be college. Your path may be trade schools. Your path may be becoming an administrator over a medical facility, but you thought you would be a nurse or you'd be this or a doctor the whole life. That you'd be involved in youth ministry, or right, that you'd be involved in civil work, or so on and so forth. I was a little heavy ministry-minded there, but I think you get the point that just because you didn't go in a particular way doesn't mean that you went the wrong way. Sure, we choose our path sometimes the wrong way. We choose the wrong people to be in our lives, or we choose the wrong places to be. But, you know, that's all of us. But to empty yourself out periodically and say, God, is all of what belongs in me, what doesn't belong in me?
Right. You know,
it's kind of the law of recognition. What needs to come into my life? What needs to go out of my life? What needs to stay? You know, when you hit 50 years old, maybe running track is not the thing.
Right.
You know, staying active is, but maybe not running track or attempting to make the baseball team,
right,
at the major levels. You know, there have been people that play a long time, but there's certain, that doesn't mean you can't be athletic.
Right.
It just means that it may look differently at that point. And it's a constant reevaluation. It's a constant, I think we should empty and pour out ourselves regularly in order to say, okay, am I on point? Am I on task? Am I going the right direction? Right.
Tara says, and don't let people on the outside try to mold someone into being like the rest, too. That's how you lose yourself.
Amen. A big amen. A big thumbs up, everything.
Right. And I think that's the other part of this nothingness thing, is that we've kind of embraced in society becoming homogenized. you know, our differences are not seen as strengths, but rather weaknesses. And so we tend to allow others to mold us into what they want us to be, whether it's at work or at home or at school or wherever it is, so that we fit in better, that we are that homogenized good student or homogenized good worker. And unfortunately, that's not a strength, that's a weakness. This idea that we all have to be the same is a weakness.
Yeah.
It is our differences that make us strong. It is our differences that make us the diverse society that can accomplish things in the face of trouble and trial. You know, if everybody thinks inside the box all the time, then there's nobody left to find a solution to a problem that doesn't fit inside the box.
Well, one thing about nothingness and pouring yourself out is along the way, there are things that get inside of us, the impurities, the things that maybe you're in a, I hate to use the term because it is so worn out these days, but maybe you're in a toxic situation at a job and you've developed animosities or you've developed a mindset towards leadership or so on and so forth. Sometimes that stuff needs to flush out of you. It's just like every once in a while we need to allow toxins to get out of our bodies and allow things to purge out of us. There's nothing wrong with a good cleanse. And so, that is so important for us to embrace that. Those, you know, nothingness isn't just, you know, God, you know, I'm not doing anything right or what. Sometimes it's just an attitude that needs adjustment. And sometimes we need to focus and allow ourselves to again, like you said, just be in a few moments and several moments and an hour. Just not, you know, just be nothing. Don't be angry. You know, don't be happy. Don't be sad. Don't be, just exist. Let your body have an emotional break for a minute. And say, all right, certain things I got to get back. I got to, you know, sometimes it's back to the basics, you know, eating healthy, drinking right, and so on.
Right. Unlatch from the world. That's correct, Tara.
Great way to put it.
We have to unplug once in a while and reset. Bishop, in your thoughts?
Well, you know, I pretty much covered it. It's very well a topic, you know. I agree with the unplugging, you know, that's why we're going back to the season of Lent, where we're going back to basics, where this at least each individual take time to think about unplugging either on Friday or Saturday, or even Sunday. Unplug for technology. Don't pick up the phone for Facebook, YouTube, whatever you do on the phone, you know, games. Just take, at least try to take one day during the season of Lent to unplug.
We used to do, we're not doing any of them this year as we're still trying to retool the parish after everything happened at the end of last year. But we normally have Taz A services during Lent. Some of those are still up online on YouTube if you want to go watch them. Taz A service is a very meditative service where you sit in silence a lot. You have music, you have readings, and then long periods of meditation, you know, 3 to 5 minutes of silence, and where you just sit and reflect on what you've just sung or what you've just read, and a time to just be present and disconnected from the world. And, you know, I thought about it last time we did it, even having like a box at the front door you could drop your phones in.
Yeah, one of those boxes that does the infrared or whatever that helps, and use it as, hey, this will help sanitize your phone.
Right. Just leave your phone in here for an hour. It'll sanitize it for you.
Ulterior motive.
Right, right. And so... Yeah, yeah. And that way you don't have that distraction during the TAS-A service.
Exactly.
Because it's easy. I mean, Reverend Mark can tell you too. It's not uncommon for us to stand in the pulpit preaching and see people with their phones out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time I went on vacation a few years ago, and I went to kind of like a nature type spot.
Right.
It was, you know, because I work a full-time job during the day, and then I have the church, and the church had been through a lot of ups and downs, and so there was a lot of focus that I'd had to pour into the church. So physically and mentally, I was just very, very tired. And so I was just away for a few days, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to be here. I'm just going to enjoy the scenery. I'm going to enjoy just being outside. And I alerted my board. I alerted all my leaders. I said, I'll have my phone off, and I left it in my room. And I said, I will turn it on once a day, or look at it once a day. And if I see a text or a call from a particular individual that I had put in charge, I said, then I'll reply. Otherwise, I didn't take my phone with me to do anything. And that was one of the best, it was just a few days, one of the best moments and realizations of how we need to disconnect periodically from just everything in life and just be for a few moments.
Right.
Just be. And a lot of times when I'm with people that I care about, or I know we're going to have some lengthy conversations, I either put my phone face down off to the side where I can't even see it, or in my pocket or whatever. And if I'm at my home, I put it off to the side where I can't even reach it. Because sometimes you have got to just let it go. Let it go.
There are very few things in life that are so important that you have to have your phone glued to your side 24/7. I mean, there are times, I told many of you last night, my great aunt passed away yesterday, and we were kind of waiting on that call, because they had put her on life support a week before, and they were disconnecting her from life support. You know, those are situations where you keep your phone pretty close. But outside of that kind of thing, there's rare moments where you have to have your phone that often. And I know we harp on phones a lot, but the reality is that is one of our biggest distractions in society.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we sit down, as I've told you all before, we sit down at Metro Coffee House a couple times a week, have our cigars and drink our coffee and just watch traffic go by. I can't tell you the number of wrecks I've nearly seen, number of people nearly run over, people run into things and run into other people because they're too busy on their phone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We were sitting down there the other day, and this young lady walking down the sidewalk texting somebody, and she runs smack dab into someone else, you know, who was also on their phone texting. By the way.
Yeah, there's very, very few reasons that we have to be constantly on the phone. You know, I am not a joint chief for the United States. I'm not the president or vice president. There's nothing that is just that important that I have to have my phone, you know, glued to my forehead for a constant interaction. Now, of course, you have situations where, you know, a loved one is, you know, not feeling well or something of that nature. I get that. But man, just the constant,
right.
You know, I go out with friends or I go out with family, and everybody's on that phone. Everybody's grabbing that phone. That's one thing if you're taking pictures of the togetherness moment. That's another thing. I remember a few weeks ago how wonderful it was. We had a birthday for my dad, and my nephews and my nieces and all of them, nephews and niece and future niece-in-laws and all that. We were all together, and I was kind of looking around, watching. Very few of them were on their phone. Very, almost, and I was shocked. And most everybody was present with everything going on. We were interacting, and I'm like, thank God. And so, you know, people do, there are folks that will do it, but it's, I challenge people here in Lent, spend some time, spend a few evenings where you just completely disconnect from the phone, read a book, watch something stupid on TV, you know, watch some Golden Girls that, you know, that just doesn't make any sense at some of the stuff they do. Whatever, just sit and let that phone sit over there on silent. It's okay. It is okay to be disconnected periodically.
JC says, don't you miss having a landline and a desktop? Yes, to some degree. You know, with technology as good as it's become now, that, you know, we carry it with us everywhere. You know, yeah, I miss the days when you had to wait to get home to take a phone call, or you know, you couldn't answer an email on the fly. You had to wait till you got to your desktop, you know. Because in some ways, we were more present, more connected with one another.
Very much so.
I want to share with you here on the podcast an experience that we had earlier in the week over at Metro. So there was a guy, African-American gentleman, with a leg brace on a bicycle. And he was across the street from us, walking down the street, and he started yelling. And it took me a minute to realize he was yelling at me. And I'm like, yeah. He says, you're a priest? I go, yeah. So he comes across the road and stands there and talks with us for a minute. He says, you gave me a light the other day. I said, yeah, I gave you a light. He says, nobody else out here would give me a light. He says, you gave me a light. He says, that meant the world to me. I said, well, you know, I appreciate that. Appreciate you telling me that. And he started talking. He says, you know, one of the biggest problems we have in society today is we're scared to connect with anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We are scared to be a part of other people's lives. He says, we'd much rather be on our phones, or, you know, be alone, or, you know, just away from everybody. He says, we don't have any concern or care for anybody but ourselves anymore. You know, he's right. You know, I sit there watching people as we sit there and smoke and stuff. People come out there and they sit with their coffees and they sit with their laptop, or they sit with their phone, and they're on their phone the whole time. As people pass to and fro, no care, concern for them. Somebody comes up, talks to them, they just ignore them, act like they're not there. You know, it's kind of a sad situation. But that's what our society has molded us into, is this kind of autonomous being. You don't need anybody, you don't need to be a part of anybody's life. But also part of nothingness is embracing one another. Embracing the fact that we're all on different paths, and learning to love one another, you know, despite who they are, despite what they're going through. And I think that's important, and sadly, it's something that we have forgotten in our society today. And you're right, Bishop Ben, the pandemic has played a big part of that too, because now we're all scared to be around anybody. We're scared we're going to get sick.
Designed for relationships, and the problem happens, or the problem comes in when the connecting of the relationships is we have bad connections because we have so many things, right, that are trying to go through those connections. Sometimes, yeah, those are unhealthy things. And sometimes there are situations where they are, you know, because we've not emptied ourselves from hurts and wounds and bitterness and, you know, the vile things that life tries to pile on us that we let in our hearts, we try to connect that with other people. And when you're trying to connect your anger, you know, what's coming through you is maybe angry or bitterness to someone who's wounded and is in need of healing, they're not going to receive that because they're already in a terrible state. Right. So you're trying to connect the impure with something that is needing you know, the balm of healing to come upon their life. And, you know, rightly so, we start jerking back and we're, you know, we usually run away from the, you know, the Debbie Downer from Saturday Night Live, you know, the lady that was always, you know, no matter what she said, she was always sickly, or she was always bringing up the problems that she had, and all, and just always, there was nothing positive, so people would run from that. And that's what happens when we allow our wounded spirits to stay wounded, whether it's through anger, bitterness, or hurt. Then we try to connect that with somebody else, and all of a sudden, we don't understand why there's a pushback or whether there's not a connection at all. So, well, honey, because you're... Listen, I have enough problems. I don't need to have both mine and whoever else I've pulled in and yours to come in and be a part of my life. So, again, it's... To me, it's like a spiritual cleanse, a spiritual, you know, time in which we bring down our life to a place of just existing and breathing. And again, it's okay to stare into the abyss for a minute,
right?
And just sit there and go, this is nice. There's nothing. There's just nothing. It's wonderful. There's no need for me to go do something because I put it off to the side. There's no need for me to just existing and breathing.
Bishop Ben, your thoughts?
Well, you know, you all pretty much covered it, but, you know, like I say, I really want to point out that, again, you know, that's just a very important part is that we need to unplug. This is Lent. You know, even as a Lent, just try to unplug at least once during the week and meditate on what we're supposed to be. How can we evolve? How can we make our life better? But not only that, but how can we make other people's lives better? And how can we show love during this time?
Right.
That's a key factor for me.
Right. Your final thoughts, Reverend Mark?
I just challenge people to just try it. You know? Just try it. It's just like trying hibachi or trying Italian or trying a certain food. You know, you don't know you love it or hate it until you actually try it.
Right.
And genuinely do it. Don't just, you know, fake it. Go in there and you spend 30 seconds and you're like, oh my God, I can't do this. Where's my phone? No, genuinely set a time, set a few moments. It doesn't have to be a lengthy amount of time, but just exist for 3, 4, 5 minutes. Just embrace that. I'm going to let nothing. And it may take a minute to get your mind to quiet. If you're like me, it will take several minutes for your mind to quiet. And just try embracing that and to let go of everything that is just holding you in that state of constant, oh, what, I've got to do something, got to do something, or anxiety, or that state of I'm a huge failure because I didn't do what other people. Just embrace that nothing.
And my final thought on that is all of the above. I think that it's important, as has been said during this time of Lent, in particular, that we take a moment to refocus Lent can be a hugely transformative period if you allow it to be. And it can be a period where you can shuffle off those things that aren't working anymore, put in practices that maybe help you. It's not just about getting rid of stuff, but sometimes it's about adding things. And in this situation, adding time to meditate, reflect, to be silent, to be just present. And I hope that you all will take this opportunity to do that and find some peace and comfort and maybe be recharged to go out there and make a difference in the world around you. So on that note, we're going to wrap up here. Next week, we have the anatomy of an ethical crisis. So that's going to be our topic next podcast. Bishop Ben suggested it. And Bishop Ben will get to explain that a little better next week as we look at the anatomy of an ethical crisis. Very good. On that note, until we see you again next week, and once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/expandingyourfaith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.